am an unqualified success.
Now get the guns, the drugs from my generation.
Years ago, I took on every wrestling promoter throughout North America. I kicked every one of their asses. In a court of law, I took on the United States of America, and I kicked her ass. I took on WCW, and it took me a while, but I kicked their asses. Not because I was an asshole, no, no. Ask me, Mr. McMahon, what's your secret? More than any one quality that makes me the successful man that I am, ruthless aggression. So I want to know here tonight, as you stand here on my ring, which one of you has that quality? Who among you has that one single ingredient? Who has enough ruthless aggression?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No info for the DEA. Federal agents mad cause I'm flagrant. Tap myself and the phone in the basement.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast here on the North South Connection Podcast Network. It's kind of crazy. I feel like I'm rolling through this pretty quickly. I'm already on episode 3 of this. I feel like I just started and I'm already 3 episodes in. So we are 2 weeks removed from the draft, and like what we saw in the last episode, you could tell that they were definitely still, WWF is still trying to transition, figure out how to do this whole brand split thing and kind of find their footing as to how they're going to handle it. But I think by this point, they should be figuring out. So that's what we're going to look at on this episode, the April 8th, 2002 Raw and the April 11th, 2002 SmackDown. And my guest on this episode to help me get through these two wrestling shows is going to be Mr. Scott Shiflett. How are you doing, Scott?
I'm doing pretty well tonight. How are you doing, Jacob?
I'm doing fine. Fine enough. So, Scott, this has kind of been my standard question as people come on here. So what is your – because actually it's been – I wouldn't say surprising based on the guests I've had so far in the kind of the age of the guests and everything. But so far, my guests have said that this is an era that they look back on kind of with nostalgia, that they kind of enjoy it and look back on it fondly. Even though I think in the broader kind of hardcore wrestling fan, I don't know what you like, zeitgeist. I don't know what you'd call that. It's kind of not always looked at so fondly. What is your, like, overall view or, like, the feelings that you have attached to this, like, early 2000s ruthless aggression era of WWF?
Well, I was 12 at the time, about to turn 13, so it was my bread and butter right there. Because I grew up, obviously, I'm from the South, and I grew up a WCW fan. I was heartbroken when they shut down in March of 2001. I watched through the invasion. And I took a break after the Alliance lost in November, but then the NWO coming back brought me back because I was like, oh, this is exciting. You know, I thought I was 12 years old, thought it was so cool. It's like, yeah, I know what's going on with wrestling because I was reading the rumors and all those websites back in the day. So this part, actually, when I was rewatching the shows, I was like, I remember liking this stuff a whole lot, but it's like you said, a forgotten era in WWE. And, you know, there's some things that I've written down here that we'll talk about during the show, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed both the rewatch.
Yeah, it is. Cause it is like I think I was still pretty much watching Raw and SmackDown week to week, but a lot of this, I don't remember. Like I remember the broad strokes of things, but it's very transitional and it's not like transitional in that, like from era to era, but also I find like, like who they have is very transitional. Like I think like when we talk about Stone Cold on this one, I think you're starting to see it like transitioning away from some of the guys that have been kind of stalwarts. And so I get what you mean. I definitely was watching, but it's interesting to go back because I don't remember every single detail either. But so you said the NWO, which has been kind of a heavy topic on these shows so far, the WWF incarnation of the NWO. So how do you feel about the – well, they're on here a little bit, but what do you think of the NWO at this time frame when they come into WWF? Because my view of it so far has been that they've been kind of lackluster. Do you remember liking them coming into WWF?
Oh, I remember begging my parents for them to order the No Way Out where they came back just for a 20-minute promo and the Rock backstage promo. I was all in, and we ordered WrestleMania the next month. Like, I was like, we're going to get back to watching these pay-per-views like monthly, like we used to do with the WCW pay-per-views in 97 and 98. But after Hogan left, it just fell off a cliff, and I remember not really caring. Like, for a little bit of spoiler, for a couple of more episodes, I remember liking it when certain other wrestlers were looking to join, maybe not, but it was just, they seem pretty dead at this point. Basically a mid-card act, so.
And I think it's something that sometimes we kind of forget. If you spend a lot of time looking at this stuff, kind of analyzing it, I think you kind of lose track of just like with Hogan and the NWO, like just how big name value is in wrestling, like for just the general fan base. Like, no matter, because obviously not every hardcore wrestling fan now or at the time was eating up Triple H versus Hogan. But I talked about in the last episode is like, but that's a huge match. Like, if you take any big Attitude Era star, like a Triple H, Stone Cold, or somebody like that, and put him against Hogan, I mean, that's a huge match. Like, that's a huge money match that no one's seen yet. And so I think sometimes we can kind of get lost with that because we think of all the, especially if you go back and look, I think, at people who were covering this at the time, a lot of it is so caught up in the politics, for lack of a better term, of like what was going on backstage, you know, like with Triple H and all that, that it kind of gets lost, I think, because people are so focused on that and not really thinking of it from like, you know, Triple H versus Hogan as a big match, you know?
Yeah, because it was the first time ever with them. Because I think, you know, Triple H was in WCW in like 94, but was only there for a little bit and then went to WWE. F at the time, and Hogan, you know, obviously stayed with WCW until Bash at the Beach, but I do think if the NWO would have like ceased to exist the night after WrestleMania and like Hall and Nash just become the Outsiders and they can bring in X-Pac, I think that would have went a little bit better than just basically the watered down version of the NWO. It's as bad as NWO 2000 to me.
Yeah. All right. So, we'll get into the NWO and Hogan and all that because they're all featured on these shows. So we'll dive right into it because we do, as we always do, we're covering an episode of Raw and SmackDown. It is a lot to cover. So we'll get started. The first episode we are going to look at is going to be the April 8th, 2002 Raw. We are live from Phoenix this week. And the first thing I noticed, the first thing on here, I'm not going to go over everything they did. But they did the thing where they just take about probably a minute or a minute and a half and just recap the previous week, like what happened on Raw the last week, which I don't know because I guess I don't watch Raw consistently. Maybe you know better than me, Scott. But I feel like this is something that's kind of lost now. And it's like at the time, I think I took it for granted, but I think it's a nice touch. I kind of like the recap of like letting me know the broad strokes of what happened the previous week. So I kind of know where we stand and how it builds off of what happened last week. I feel like this is not something that they do a ton anymore, is the quick recap before the show even starts.
Yeah, I do agree. I love the quick recap because, you know, I've listened to the previous episode for this. So I was locked in with the storylines, but if I wasn't, I was like, oh, this is a nice refresher. But with current Raw, they pick and choose when they'll do it. Like, if something happened, say, with Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins, they'll show it at the start of the show, but then the next week they'll barely go over it, but not go over anything else. But this seemed like it to catch a lot of stuff up, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, and something we're going to get into as we go through this is that I think a lot of times people see this as an era where, like, WWE's, like, weekly TV starts to get a little disjointed and kind of random, and they're just throwing stuff out there. But I think it's still where they're overall still fairly focused in how they build from show to show and trying to make sure it's pretty clear, like, if things are going to be on a pay-per-view. Because at this point, we are basically 2 weeks, I think, from Backlash at this point. So they're in the build to Backlash at this point. They had the draft. They had the fall from the draft. Now they're trying to build towards Backlash. But as we're going to see on the show, which I was kind of pleasantly surprised by, is that it seems like they are still trying to be focused in, like, build from week to week, which is nice, I think. Another thing I noticed in the opening is they did the classic kind of like the pyro and everything in the crowds, even though we are maybe away from the hottest crowds of, like, what you saw in, like, 99 and the real peak of the Attitude Era. The crowds at this point are still super hot. Like, this is a super hot crowd, and they stay pretty hot throughout the night. I don't know. What did you think of the crowd, Scott?
Yeah, I actually have a note here that says so many signs in the crowd. I was just blown away, and I was trying to read all the signs. I don't know about you. That's, like, one of my favorite things to do is, like, to see, like, the clever signs that people have. I was just blown away, and the crowd stayed pretty hot all night. Different chants and everything at different wrestlers, and, you know, it's, you can tell it's, like, in between two eras, which is very nice.
Yeah, like, I think a lot of people may think of this as a time when their popularity is sort of waning, but at least for the live crowd, I mean, it's still pretty hot. The crowd is still way into it. All right, so our first segment, as we start a lot of these Raws in this era, we're going to start with an in-ring kind of promo segment. So the first person out is Taker. Undertaker comes out on his Harley, and I always find this is, like, a thing I always have found funny, is when the guys come out on the motorcycles and try and ride around the ring, but the ring is not enough. There's not enough room around the ring to really, like, truly ride the motorcycle, so they kind of just walk the motorcycle around, revving the engine. I always find that's a silly visual when anybody tries to ride a motorcycle around a wrestling ring. It's always kind of, I always thought they looked a little silly. I don't know if you have any feelings on that, Scott.
Yeah, it definitely worked, like, from bigger arenas, but with, like, small ones and they're confined, it's like, you know, he could just walk down, like, make it have, like, the motorcycle just be for special occasions. But
yeah, or just, like, come down the ramp and get off, because he looks a little silly trying to do a donut around the ring when there's not enough. Yeah, but anyway, that's just a little thing that I always notice. So obviously Undertaker is pissed off because he was promised a title shot against Triple H at Backlash, which was then immediately taken away from him because it was Vince said that Triple H was going to face Hogan, and now he wants to know what the hell is going on. I'm not the biggest fan of this Undertaker. He has a good point here because, honestly, he was promised a title shot and just got taken away from him for basically, like, sort of a ridiculous bureaucratic reason that, like, his GM is not the one that gets to call it. But I'm not the biggest fan of this Undertaker. Like, we've talked about him before in, like, the chats and stuff of calling it, like, Steal Your Girl Undertaker. Like, this Undertaker where he's kind of, like, he talks a lot and he tries to be, I don't even know how to describe it. It's very, like, he's trying to be all smooth and everything. And it's very awkward. And here he even says bullshit. He says everything is bullshit, and they actually did not bleep it on the network. So Taker's pissed that he is not getting the title shot. Scott, what did you think of this first part of this promo with Undertaker? What were your impressions of, this heel motorcycle, lot of, very verbal Undertaker?
Yeah, I mean, it was different to see because, you know, the past couple years we've just been so used to his dead man aura persona, which, I mean, he sort of brought back like the biker taker for the graveyard match. And I think he talked too much. I like it better when he's like more quiet and just does his ass kicking. But yeah, when he was like, and like, you can tell like the what chants, they weren't really used to Lowe's at the time. So when they were chanting that, yeah, you can tell he was getting a little perturbed. But yeah, it was, it's kind of putting me to sleep with him at first. I kept looking, I was like, how many minutes has this been? And it only been like two or three. So.
We still have a lot to go in this entire segment. He's only the first act.
Oh yeah, it definitely picks up in the second and third acts of this segment. So
yeah, so Taker's pissed off because he feels like his title shot was taken away from him. So Ric Flair, the GM, comes out to try and to placate him. Flair says that he was too ambitious, that he made a mistake. And so what he is going to do is he's going to make a title match after Backlash. And so I find this is kind of a weird dynamic because you have the dueling GMs. And so now but the title can go on each show. So you already have this thing where it's like, okay, well, which GM gets to make the title matches? This whole segment with Flair and Taker right here is basically them trying to cover their tracks after having another long segment right after the draft where Taker was promised the title. And so this is them trying to, I guess, kind of retcon it and sort of try and work Taker into the angle, even though he cannot get the title shot at Backlash. So it's like Flair telling him, well, he'll get the title shot after Backlash. And so then Stone Cold comes out. So cue Stone Cold, who's still getting a pretty big pop. He said that Taker thinks he deserves it. He calls, he basically shits all over Taker's outfit. He says that his stupid gloves, pretty much calls out his entire gimmick. And he says that Flair has to decide who gets the shot. Flair shares his grievances with both guys. He says that Taker beat him up at WrestleMania. And then, of course, Austin stunned him in the last segment of last week's Raw because that's just Austin's persona. So he says if they put their hands on him again, there's going to be hell to pay. And so it's something we'll need to remember because it's going to be relevant later. But basically says that nobody's going to put their hands on him. So what he is going to do is make two number one contenders matches. Undertaker tonight is going to face RVD and Austin is going to face Scott Hall. And then Taker says that I think he said Flair was full of crap, which was, again, it's very awkward to hear like Undertaker use these kind of corny lines, but it's like he's supposed to be a badass, but to me he kind of sounds like a goof sometimes, which I guess it was I guess it's just him trying to work this like kind of whiny heel persona. But so Taker says he deserves it. He calls Austin a cue ball, and then finally Austin snaps and then hits him, and that kind of concludes the very, I think it was about a 15-minute long opening segment. And so I thought it was okay enough because I guess they have to cover their tracks on the whole Undertaker thing. Like, obviously, Undertaker can't just sit there and take it that his title shot was taken away from him. And these are obviously all really well-known and top guys, but I thought the time, I think you already mentioned it, Scott, the time on this, I mean, it's an extremely long segment to open the show. And I felt like at times it's sort of like it went in circles. Like it was Taker saying, well, I deserve it. Then Austin would say he deserved it. And then Flair would say, well, I'm going to make the rules. And they kind of just kept on bouncing that around for what felt like 20 minutes. And so I thought it was sort of weird dynamic, but I guess they had to do something to fix the whole Undertaker title shot thing. But I felt like it was too much time and there was not enough heat with this to really justify all that time. What did you think, Scott?
So I have written down that Flair is as red as the Kool-Aid man because he was extremely tan. And yeah. I was just like, whoa.
He gets very red.
And I will agree, the pop for Austin was insane. I do have that written down here. But one thing that I did enjoy about this era with the world titles is that you'll see like them – the champion ping-ponging back and forth, which I thought was really cool because then you could like have like these matches be like, oh, you know, the champion won't be here until next month. I can work my way up. So I enjoyed that as a kid and I still enjoy it now. It's like the wrestlers working their way up, and they have to wait for the title shot. And I got that Austin's the only wrestler who the What Chance worked for. He had it down perfectly. Like when he was saying stuff to Undertaker and Flair, the crowd's just going insane. And it's weird how, like, I don't know if Flair flubbed the line, but so both of them are going to be number one contender, but they have to have a match beforehand to see if they become number one contender. That was explained.
It makes sense as the show goes on and after the matches actually happen. And I guess you're definitely right. I don't think he actually explained it. I don't know if it's just they forgot to explain it or they kind of thought maybe, because I think before the match, we'll get to the matches later on, but I think they almost, you kind of like, we can kind of predict what's going to happen. And maybe they assume that we knew how it would work, because the thing is, like, the obvious question would be, well, if it's, they're both number one contenders matches, what if they both win? So then who's the number one contender? Now we'll see what happens as we go, but I agree with you. It was not really very clear. It came off as very, very convoluted, I found, which again makes me think like, was this a plan, or are they just trying to figure out a way to fix this after they decided to go with Hogan kind of on the fly, you know?
Yeah, that's what they definitely had to do, but it was very convoluted.
Yeah, and part of it, I think, is they're trying to come up with good matches. They want good matches for Raw because obviously they have a lot of time to fill. But like I said, I totally get what they were doing. It was just very long, and it's hard to complain when you have guys who really are talented and can kind of carry this. But I just didn't think the heat was there. Maybe it was a little bit too much time. And I don't want to get to the point where for all these shows, I'm constantly ragging on them for doing a long opening promo, because I know that's just kind of what they do at this point. But it definitely stands out. But
yeah, they still do it 18 years later. So
yeah, it's a trope that they love. It's still relevant today, like you said. But all right, but after this all wraps up, so we'll look forward to those matches later. The first match of the night is the newly crowned hardcore champion Bubba Ray Dudley is going to take on Booker T. Before the match, we get some ads for the Scorpion King, which is going to be coming out in May, I think it was, of 2002. So basically like The Rock's first starring role, which is obviously pretty significant in the long run. And then some wonderful collect call ads, which were still around in 2002. I don't think they would be around much longer, the collect call thing, because cell phones were quickly becoming pretty ubiquitous. But we still get the like 1-800 ATT ads on these shows. Booker comes out. I really like Booker's theme. I think his entrance is pretty cool with the fire, and his theme is a banger for sure. This was a pretty, to me, I thought this was a pretty standard hardcore affair. A little more wrestling than usual than what you'd expect from most of these hardcore matches at this time. I thought there were some decent big spots. I like Booker's scissor kick, but the finish was Goldust comes out and tries to steal the title because we have the 24/7 rule, but he eats a big power bomb and gets pinned by Bubba. And I thought it was kind of a weird finish because Bubba pins Goldust, who wasn't in the match. So the rules of this are a little shaky, because is it like Money in the Bank style, where it's like if Goldust runs in, it's like a triple threat match, or does Bubba have to still pin Booker? Apparently he does not, because he pins Goldust after the powerbomb and he wins. I went 1.5 stars on this because I thought it was probably a little bit better than what we normally get, just because I thought there's a little more to it than just basic kind of weapon shots. Like I said, there's a little more wrestling to it, and they did some nice high spots. What'd you think of this one, Scott?
I like that Booker T did the spinaroonie. I'm always a fan of that. And they did that, yeah. And then Bubba did some dancing that was embarrassing. But the match was decent. I have a right here. There was a vicious stop sign shot to the back of Bubba's head, which was looked like concussion inducing. So still a little jarring to see that, just because we don't see those type of shots at least around this time anymore. I wrote down the same thing about Goldust running in and Bubba pins Goldust, and I wrote, why does Booker T match end and where did he go? So I guess he just left. And I did a star and a half as well for this match.
Something I had mentioned in the before the match starts, they do a thing where Booker cuts a promo before the match, and he says that everyone came to see the Spinneroonie, like you had mentioned. The Spinneroonie, it really is a pretty impressive dance move, actually. It's like it's not the easiest dance move to pull off. But then so they did a deal where Bubba plays this kind of cheesy generic electronic music, and he does. He says, play some funky music for this white boy. And then he starts cutting kind of like some cheesy dance moves. And I think he does it on the way out too, after he wins. And I guess maybe they're trying to push this as part of his kind of singles persona, is the whole, I guess, like dancing thing. What did you think of this? Did you like Bubba dancing?
Did not like Bubba dancing. I'd actually forgotten all about this. For some reason, I thought he was more of a serious character at this point. Did not like Bubba dancing, but you know, it was good to see Booker T, and he was one of my favorites at the dying days of WCW, so I was glad to see him in the WWF.
Yeah, I was also not a big fan of the Bubba, and I'm interested to see if this is going to be one of their like do it for a week or two and then completely forget about it when they realize it's kind of dumb. But I did not, and my thing is, I need to give him a chance as I progress through this, but thus far, I don't find him, he's not likable as a face to me, Bubba Ray Dudley. I don't know what it is about him. I know if it's the dancing or, I mean, it's not just the dancing, but it's not helping. I think his character is portrayed to be funny, but I don't find him to be funny. And I don't know, he just doesn't come off as very likable as a face. And I feel like they're trying to present him as likable, and I'm not buying it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, and he's just not a very likable person.
Yeah. If you go to his real life persona, maybe not the most popular guy either. But all right, so continuing on, but I'll give him a shot. I'll give him a fair shake. I'm not going to judge him too much after, because it is a rough thing he's so synonymous with the Dudley Boys tag team. I'm going to give him some time to kind of find his way, but. So next up, we cut backstage to Trish, who is backstage. They recap the illustrious paddle on a pole match, which happened last week on Raw. Trish says that tonight will be different. Regal comes in, and I don't know if you are a Regal fan, Scott, but I love, not just as a wrestler, but he gives a lot of Regalisms here, which were just amazing. He says, he tells Trish, who cares about you, you filthy scrubber? All you're good for is dressing your knickers.
Yes.
And then she tells him that Regal was put in this place by Spike because Spike upset him last week. And what did he say? I think he called Spike a toe rag, I think is what he said. He says it was a fluke, just like Spike's birth was an abortion on society, and said that he's going to turn Spike into a vegetable. I thought this was a really fun segment because all the Regalisms were gold, and I thought Trish carried herself well keeping up with Regal's insanity. And yeah, it was really good, and I like that they're building. I thought this was an effective quick backstage segment because it kind of builds what's going on with Trish and also reminds us of what's going on with Regal. And Regal's always amazing, so I'll never complain about Regal.
Yeah, as I've gotten older, I've really grown to appreciate William Regal more. When I was younger, he was just boring to me. I remember hating him, like on WCW, like pro as Lord Steven Regal, and when he was in WWF, I was just like, get this man off the screen. But just that, like you said, all his lines in the promo, I was laughing as I was watching it. He's just amazing, a very underrated talent, in my opinion.
Yeah, he calls Spike an abortion in society, and he calls Trish a filthy scrubber. Just the insults are amazing stuff, as always, from Regal. But all right, so we continue on because this is what I kind of dub when they get into these roulette of backstage segments, because now we cut somewhere else backstage, and it's Terry. And I thought it's kind of interesting because like a week ago, Terry was doing this, like, was shit talking Trish and doing kind of doing the pat on the pole match. And now she's apparently like a normal backstage interviewer, which is kind of funny. But so she's interviewing Kane, who's looking at the Divas, the new issue of the Divas mag. And he says that his, his parts are not burnt. I'm assuming he's referring to his penis still works. He says he's been called a monster and he's ashamed, but after teaming with Rock and Hogan, he knows, that freaks can kick ass. He gets some cheap heat for calling out Randy Johnson to the Arizona fans. He's going to face X-Pac tonight. And you could tell that they are really trying, like, this is the angle they're trying to push with Kane now. They're really taking what happened, which the awesome promo he cuts with Rock and Hogan, and really trying to turn that into this new kind of fun Kane persona. And so far, I do like it. I think it works well. It doesn't come off as, like Gory just said, Bubba does not come off likable. I thought he comes off as likable enough. It's not grating to me, and I'm kind of enjoying the goofy kind of Kane.
Yeah, I really liked it. Like, with the freaks kick ass, he was calling his fans the Canaanites, which I enjoyed very much. I only thought that was like a 1 week thing. I didn't realize they were still doing it weeks after the fact, but Kane in 2002 of me was, I was a big Kane fan.
Talking about how his junk still works, that it's not burnt. Yeah. And I think this is like the freaks kick ass thing. I think we're still kind of in that late 90s, early 2000s era where like people really get behind that, because I feel like I guess in American culture sort of, that was still sort of like a big thing in pop culture. I feel losers are freaks kind of getting their day to shine sort of thing. I feel like it was still like in a lot of movies, like in a lot of popular comedies, that was usually like a thing. So I feel like they're kind of building off of that, which I think is pretty shrewd move to do, because I feel
they're usually behind the cultural. The cultural norm there. So like they're doing a hacker gimmick now when Mr. Robot ended like 6 months ago. So
yeah, exactly. So I like Kane well enough. And so we cut to his opponent, which is X-Pac, and X-Pac is back playing with nunchucks. And he says, he tells his NWO cronies that he wants Kane alone. He does not want them to interfere. And so that leads us to the ring for the match, which we have X-Pac versus Kane, which is false count anywhere. They really did not give any kind of like rationale why it would be false count anywhere. And so we start off basically the little we did have of the match was just X-Pac. He jumps out early, but basically he cannot kind of overpower Kane. And really the entire point of the match is that he leads Kane backstage where Kane gets jumped by the NWO, and it was a really, really brutal beatdown. Like they, I thought it was a really well done beatdown. They kind of throw him on the cement. They take his, X-Pac takes off Kane's mask and kind of slams him with the chair shot, with his head against the cement. And I really thought, this was like we talked about the NWO earlier. This is the best I've seen so far of the NWO. It's the closest I've seen to like that old school kind of gang, like early WCW kind of brutal sort of gang persona that they had early in the early run of the NWO. Like I find it's the most credible they've looked on WWF TV so far, because they basically just, beat the shit out of Kane. And like I said, it looks pretty brutal, like the chair shot, slamming him into the cement. It's pretty brutal stuff. And the only thing that saves Kane is Bradshaw comes out to save him. So the match, I rated half a star, but honestly, it's hard to even consider it a match because it was about like 90 seconds before X-Pac leads him to the back to get jumped by the NWO. So it really was more of an angle than it was a match. But I thought it was effective in that it made the NWO look better. And also, I think it helps put sympathy on Kane because they want him to be a face. And I think sometimes it can be difficult to get that sympathy for a guy like Kane where everything he does is based on sort of his power. What did you think of this match/angle, Scott?
I counted, so I gave it 2 stars, and I counted the angle as part of the match.
Understandable, because I
thought it was that effective. Like, Hall hits Kane with a crowbar, Kevin Nash breaks a 2x4 over him, and then X-Pac does the one-man concerto pretty much, and it was pretty badass. And then with the part with Bradshaw coming in, I enjoyed, like, the push of Bradshaw right here, because he kind of looked like, you know, a tough, like the tough Texan they always say that he is. And like he comes off the NWO scampers. I mean, he is a big boy, and I wish they, you know, I'm interested to see what happens with this character, because I really liked him getting like this push to like upper mid card main event type.
Yeah, and we saw it. He's really good at this sort of thing, like running in and trying to clear house, because we saw it whenever the NWO, I think that was on the last episode, where the NWO was taking over the APA's old kind of office, and he like kicks through the door. That was pretty good. So yeah, he's really awesome at that sort of, like you said, he's a big, strong guy. So he comes in and he's really good at the whole like clearing house thing. So yeah, I agree. I think he looked good. And yeah, I totally get what you're saying. If you, it's kind of a segment, and yeah, if I were rating the whole segment, I would definitely, my rating would be higher if I take into account all that, because I thought it was a really well done angle and segment. Like I said, I really liked that they're, I thought it was effective at getting sympathy for Kane, which can be tough when it's a guy that's kind of a dominant, more powerful guy, but good stuff. So sort of continuing with this, we cut to the back after, Bradshaw chasing away, and we see X-Pac is in the back. He's wearing Kane's mask, and you could hear Nash in the background saying, "Look at the gimp." So that was kind of a funny line.
I did like that. Like, he's wearing the mask and Nash is saying that. I was laughing at that.
Yeah, like I said, I felt like NWO, this is the best they've looked so far. So of course, Flair comes in as I'm watching this thinking, wow, the NWO, this is the best they look so far. Flair comes in to reprimand them, and Nash grabs Flair by the collar. And so, based on what he said earlier, that people are not going to put their hands on him, he suspends Nash indefinitely. I'm pretty sure Nash is most likely injured at this point. I feel like, I don't know exactly what it was. I think he might have like a shoulder and arm injury at this point. And so I think this is basically to write him off because he's injured. But it kind of sucks, because literally seconds after, it says the best NWO segment we've seen so far with actual heat, they immediately get neutered and lose Nash, which at this point, now they are just X-Pac and Scott Hall, which is just completely a shell of what the NWO is. So that's a little disappointing.
Yeah, they cut them off right at their knees. Like, they had finally gotten some heat right there. And then Flair just comes in and suspends Nash. And Nash lets him go and goes, "I'll sue you." Which,
In
WCW, they were supposed to be like these ass kickers. And now, you know, Nash is like, "Let me call up my lawyer and, you know, I'll take you to court and sue you." It's like, really? All that goodwill just flushed down the toilet.
Yeah, I find the only one so far that has really seemed like his heart was anywhere in it is X-Pac. Hall and Nash seem very checked out to me. And we'll get to Hall later in the show, because he's going to obviously go against Austin. But yeah, I feel like X-Pac is the only one that really has any kind of fire right now. Hall and Nash just seem kind of like they wish they were still collecting their Time Warner money, or whatever it was, the reason they couldn't come in earlier. But all right, well, so next up we have a rematch between William Regal and against who he said was an abortion in society, Spike Dudley. This is a rematch of the big upset from last week, when Spike upset William Regal when he was going for the brass knuckles. So when Regal's coming into the ring, the brass knuckles fall out, so he puts another pair in the turnbuckle while the ref's back is turned, which is fun. Spike steals them behind the ref and Regal's back, and basically right as the match is starting, he hits Regal with the knuckles behind the ref doesn't see it, and then he wins the title. Okay, so I didn't really give this one a rating, because I don't even know if it really counts as a match, so I just went no rating on this one. I thought the ref kind of looked like a fool, sort of, for not catching on to any of this, but I still think it's a fun enough angle with the, as far as just kind of like a filler feud for Raw. I thought this was fine enough. I love Regal, obviously, and Spike to me is kind of a fun character to put in this sort of role. He's the perfect underdog. So I thought this was good enough. And, Regal getting to kind of be pissed off Regal is always fun. So it's fine enough. I didn't really rate it because I didn't consider a match. Again, this was to me even more of an angle than the last match because we literally got no match. It was just Spike hitting them with the knuckles and getting the pin. But, good enough.
Yeah, I did the same. I wrote not able to rank, but it was entertaining because I liked when, like, you know, William Regal thinks he's getting the upper hand because he's like, oh, look, I lost my nux. And then he puts another one in, and then Spike just comes down and takes it and knocks him out. I enjoyed that. It was funny to me. So.
Yeah, it's fun seeing Spike outsmart him. Yeah, until we get the... Scott.
I thought we had a lot of titles now in WWE. I forgot how many titles there were back when.
Yeah, so far doing these shows, I don't know if I'm completely... I feel like I'm starting to catch on to like the secondary titles, but it definitely seems very... a little hard to keep track of like the European title, which this was for. Like the European title, the hardcore title seemed like very scattered for sure. So we get Spike. After he wins, he cuts a promo with Coach in the back and everyone comes out to congratulate him. And it ends up with everyone. Big Show pours a Slurpee on Coach. Bubba comes and does, I guess, like the brotherly sort of the respect thing because Spike is his brother. And I don't know. Again, just more putting over Spike as sort of a lovable, scrappy baby face. And I think he's a fun character. So, again, fine enough. Any other thoughts on this Spike Dudley angle?
Yeah, and I like the little Slurpee thing because they poured it on Coach and Spike. But then, like, Bubba comes up and acts like he's a hard ass when 20 minutes before, you know, he was dancing like a goof. So, obviously, they're still trying to figure out what to do with this character. And it was coming off a little heelish, like everyone was getting scared that he was going to knock out Spike. But
it's definitely Bubba's weird. It's like, I don't even know what it is that just doesn't click for me. I don't know. All right. But continuing on. So next up, we have our first of our two number one contenders matches, which is RVD, the Intercontinental Champion versus Undertaker, but it is non-title. So this is not for the Intercontinental title. It's just, I don't know. Flair pulled RVD out of a hat. So that's who he has to face. I find Roland is a weird song for a heel also. Like Taker's still using Roland, like the Limp Bizkit song. And I find that's seems like a very babyface song to use. I mean, not that I like love Limp Bizkit or anything, but just as far as wrestling themes, it definitely seems like a babyface thing. So it's kind of funny that he's supposed to be this kind of dickhead heel.
Yeah. It got me hype when he came out. Cause I was like, yeah, like it was like bringing back a bunch of memories of like, being that age, and I was like, yeah, I love that song at the time. And then Taker comes out and it's like, oh yeah, he's supposed to be a bad guy and comes out with Roland and on a motorcycle. That makes total sense.
Yeah. So this match, I was very pleasantly surprised by this match because I kind of didn't know what to expect. This is the first I see of Taker since I started this podcast. It's the first Taker match I've gone to. So I was like, Taker in this era, Raw match. I don't know what this is going to be like. But I really like the story that they told in this match. So basically, it was basically like Taker is mostly in control. But RVD is constantly finding like crafty ways to stay in it. He's either reversing things. He's being resourceful. And I thought they did some really cool spots with that. Like, Taker's constantly trying to sneak in a chair. And there was a point where, he kind of did off the top rope. He kicks the chair into Taker and that sort of thing. So I really like the overall story of it. I know not everybody is super excited about Taker controlling most of the offense, but I'm kind of okay with it because it fit into what they were doing. Like kind of the big man, little man thing. even not that RVD is super little or anything, but I just love the whole story of RVD being crafty and trying to like constantly trying to cut him off. And I thought RVD was protected because as we've been seeing on the shows, so Eddie comes out and basically Eddie keeps on interfering to try and to screw over RVD. And eventually it finally does end up costing RVD the match because Undertaker, I think he finished with a wasn't a choke slam because a choke slam, I think he got the near fall. I think he hit him with the last ride. Last ride, because yeah, earlier in the match, he had gone for the last ride and RVD reversed it. That was a cool spot. And, he even hit Taker with the 5-star, but then Eddie sneaks in and, ruins the cover. So it's basically the entire match is that like RVD's hanging, but it's like Eddie is constantly sneaking in to cost him the match. So I really thought this was a really solid match. I like the story they told. Again, there's a lot of good near falls, good near fall and a choke slam. I like a lot of the reversals. I like the Van Damminator he did with the chair to Taker. So I consider this one, I went almost like, I would call this a borderline hidden gem. I went 3.25 on this one. I liked it a lot more than I expected to.
Yeah, I was in love with this match. I was shocked at how much it was. Taker hits a superplex. And then
those are a great spot too. Yeah.
Hit the Van Damminator. And I love the ending. Like we said, with the 5-star frog splash, then Eddie, you know, hits him with the title belt, and then RVD kicks out. I thought it was over, and you know, I bit on the end, and then Taker finished him off with the last ride. I went 3.75 stars. That's how much I enjoyed this match. Mm-hmm. I was blown away. I wasn't expecting it, to be honest.
Yeah, again, I thought it was especially like Taker, I was like, I don't know if this is going to work, but it kind of reminded me of the Taker match that will be coming in the future where they worked it well enough to where you kind of started to think there was a chance that RVD could win with the near falls and almost like I thought it was very effective with the Eddie angle because I think you get the feeling after the match that if it wouldn't have been for Eddie constantly interfering and screwing over RVD, that he may have had a chance to beat Taker in this one. I thought it was really well done. So, I think it did a good job of building the feud between Eddie and RVD because at this point after, last week, it's kind of getting across that Eddie is not going to stop until he gets RVD. He's basically going to he's going to make his life hell until he gets till RVD addresses him, which I thought is a very simple, but effective angle, especially when you have somebody like Eddie who really knows how to sell it and do it and hit all the spots exactly correct. So I thought that was really well done too. So again, I thought RVD looked pretty competitive because I thought if it wouldn't have been for Eddie, there's some spots in there where you could argue like he probably could have won it.
Yeah, I agree. It was, I was just legitimately blown away because, you know, I remember, because I go back and reread the old Observers on my lunch break at work, mm-hmm. and Meltzer gives Undertaker so much shit during this time. I was expecting the stinker, mm-hmm. and I was legitimately blown away with just how good it was. And RVD's offense just feels fresh compared to everyone else in the company. With, mm-hmm. I mean, it's standard stuff now, but I just can't get over how good this match was.
To me, I almost think of it as a hidden gem. Like probably the first match in here I would consider sort of a hidden gem and that I did not expect it to be. I was not expecting much at all. And I think you'd almost think like their styles would clash, but I think it worked perfectly well. They did an awesome job of using, you know, I hate to say it because it's like the cliche, like the educated feet and all that. Like he's so unique and everything with the RVD stuff, but I thought they worked it in super well. So yeah, I thought it was really well done. I was very pleasantly surprised. Very pleasantly surprised with this match. So I got it. And I think what you were saying, like Meltzer, everything. And that's why I think it's interesting to go back to kind of what we're talking about at the top of the show is like, I think a lot of people, when they were looking at this in real time, like in this match, I think it probably got a little bit underrated most likely if anybody was watching at the time, because I know people were pissed that Taker got so much offense and so people saw it as him burying RVD, And so I think it was a little harder for people in the time to like just look at it as a match. And, you know, we're like 20 years later, so we're not that invested in, you know, where this is going to go. It's already happened. It is what it is. So we're not so concerned about the, you know, the booking parts of it, of making RVD look weak. We just want to see a good match. And I think it was a good match. Like we both just said. So,
yeah.
All right. Good stuff. Okay. So, next up we have Trish versus Molly. So this goes, back to last week when Molly, cracked a paddle over Trish's head after the bikini paddle on the pole nonsense match. We have Jazz, who is the women's champion. She's on commentary. And so her whole gimmick, I'll just say it now, her whole gimmick for this entire match, she's on commentary, but she doesn't say anything. It's just them on commentary. King is constantly trying to get her attention, but they just cut to her staring. So that's her whole, which fits her character, because that's kind of her character, is she's just kind of brooding and angry. Molly puts over her new serious character. She says she doesn't like a paddle on the pole nonsense, and they started putting over, so this is obviously something that has not aged super well. So they start putting over this whole thing because Molly's the heel, that she's just jealous. Like, she does not like the paddle on the pole matches and the bikini matches because she's jealous of Trish's, I guess, you know, Trish's body or what have you, which obviously does not age very well. I think a lot of what Molly's saying right here would probably be seen as more of like babyface comments. In our present time. And so I thought that was kind of a little bit of a cringy thing, which is going to happen when you're watching wrestling from 20 years ago. You know, you're going to run into some, maybe a few uncomfortable comments, but that was a little like, you know, that was a little saying that she was jealous of Trish, you know, just because Molly doesn't like to dress in a bikini and doesn't like paddle on a pole matches. But I thought, so this match, I really enjoyed the intensity of it. I thought they did a good job of putting over sort of their feud, their budding feud, and like the anger and the hatred between the two of them. I thought it was a good mix of stiff shots, but then they also worked in some really well-worked high spots. So I thought this is a pretty solid match to kind of start off a feud between them. It ended Jazz. So the finish was that Jazz hit Trish with the belt, with the women's belt outside, and that allows Molly to roll Trish up. And then she locked in this kind of surfboard looking pinning combo. And so Molly actually wins this one due to the interference by Jazz. But I thought the whole package was pretty well. I thought it was, I liked the intensity of it. I went 2.25.
Yeah, I enjoyed this match. It was a decent brawl to start. I was shocked, you know, how well they were getting into it. But sadly, the crowd just did not care. I caught a "We Want Puppies" chant, which also shows something else that did not age well. And it was pretty cool how you said earlier with Jazz, how she was just like seething with anger. And she didn't even say anything until like Trish ran over to her and she said one word. And I think Trish decked her, and then Jazz hit Trish in the face. I went a 1.75 on this. I felt maybe if it didn't have interference, it might have been a little bit better. But we all know what it was, just a storyline match for Trish to build for with Molly Holly and for Jazz, it appears.
Yeah, like I said, to me, it was a really well-done TV match. You know, it wasn't very long, but I think for what they did, again, I thought I liked the intensity, and I thought they had some good stiff spots mixed in. But like you said, I didn't mention it, but yeah, the crowd did not respond super well to it. Like you said, we're still in the era where, and I mean, the thing is it's also that's what they've conditioned the crowd to expect. I mean, last week you had a paddle on a pole match, and now we have this more serious angle. It's kind of like, you know, what is the crowd, what are they supposed to expect when this is when you're putting out there? This is, you know, when you have paddle on the pole matches and you're presenting the woman who does not like those sort of matches, as she's the heel and she doesn't like to have fun and she's just jealous. It's, you're kind of putting into the crowd's head that that's what they're supposed to enjoy. So yeah, it's definitely, I'm interested to see, because I think, not to keep on saying transition, but I feel like you'll see some of that starting, to change in this era too, with the way the women are portrayed. I think it's already started with Trish before this, but I think you're really going to start to see it as this era progresses. But I do think it will be kind of up and down. I think they'll kind of have an identity crisis when it comes to the women's division, but I guess we'll see what happens. All right. Next up, we have Paul Heyman is in the back with this client, Brock. He runs down Phoenix, basically gets some cheap heel heat by talking shit about Phoenix. Tells Brock that he can't attack the fans. And Paul is looking like completely wonderful sleazebag Paul Heyman. His tie here is completed, this terrible tie on, this horrendous looking tie. He has kind of like a 5 o'clock shadow going on with his to match his skullet. So he's looking like top sleazeball Paul Heyman at this point.
Yeah, Brock just looks amazing. Like you could just tell he was just gonna be a champion and destroy people. Like, he just looks like a killer. And you know, the Heyman did piss off the crowd. They have a Yankee suck chant, which I agree with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was all in with agreeing with them on that, but. And not to get, I'll save my comments for what's coming up next.
Yeah, and so after this, so that was backstage. So then we cut to the next segment. They head out to the ring. JR has a funny line here where he says that Heyman has a rectal cranial inversion, which I guess is saying that he's an ass. I guess is what he's saying. like you said, there's heat for he gets a lot of cheap heat for the Yankees, which I want to say is this. I'm not a huge baseball fan, but I feel like this is like, is this like when the Diamondbacks won the World Series? It's like this era?
They won it in 2001, so that's
gotcha.
Five or six months before.
Gotcha. Okay. So he's basically getting heat by saying the Yankees are better. He claims he starts putting himself over, saying that he groomed Austin and Taker. And kind of overstating all his accomplishments, taking credit for all those guys when obviously he did not make them. And so he says he knows when to spot the next big thing. And the next big thing is Brock Lesnar. We get some footage of Lesnar's path of destruction so far. And before we get to the run-in, I really loved the build to Brock so far. Like we're going to see, I think it's time. It's kind of run its course, and it's time for him to really get in the ring and start and actually start working matches. But I really like the way they built him. It reminds me of like an old school kind of WCW way of building somebody, like an early 90s WCW, like a 92 era of building up a guy where they just have him come in and like run through guys. And now they show all these highlights of him destroying all these people before he even has a match. I thought that was I really liked the way that they put this together. But so he's been his last victim were the Hardy Boys. So what they do is they run in here from behind and they go after Brock. And so in a really sick looking spot, Brock just takes Jeff and completely throws him over the top rope, completely out of the ring. And the way they shot it looked really good because they shot it from inside the ring. So you just see Jeff kind of just barreling towards the ground, which was a really awesome spot. So the Hardys come back with chairs. It takes multiple shots in the head for them to get Brock out of there. And so it's pretty clear at this point that the Hardys were not just like another victim of him, that this is actually going to be some kind of feud. I thought this was really well done. It was really intense in the spots, like that shot of, like I said earlier, of Jeff going out of the ring, of him just tossing Jeff out of the ring was just brutal. And just seeing him take these brutal chair shots to the head. And that's what it took just to get him out the ring. And he honestly doesn't even look that like fazed by it. I just loved how heated and intense this is. And it continues to build Brock as a monster. I thought this was a really awesome, well done segment.
I agree 100%. Like, going back to that video of like him just killing people, I could watch that forever because he was just destroying. I guess that was like going to be his first finishing move was that double power bomb. That mm-hmm. thing looks awesome with him just killing Spike Dudley. And the Hardys come in when they would try to beat him with the chair shots. Those chair shots were disgusting. They rocked him head on with those. And he didn't even fall. He like fell out of the ring, but still landed on his feet when he fell out of the ring. That's how you make a wrestler look like a killer right there.
And like you said, so Logan and I talked about this a few episodes ago because it's kind of still in the early part of him doing this. And I said, I mean, obviously we know where Brock goes, but I think at the time when I was first seeing him, you know, you see so many big guys come and go in WWE that at first when you see Brock, I mean, obviously he looks like a monster, but you kind of don't know what's going to happen with him. Like, is he just kind of going to be another big guy, maybe another big guy who can't work or something? But I think by this point, you're starting to see like he's not going to be that already. Like, just the way this angle's done, you can already see that he's different. Like, he's got it almost already. I don't want to say got it because I haven't seen him really do a match yet. But you know what I mean? Like he knows how to do wrestling. Like, he knows how to do an angle. He knows how to make everything look good already, and he hasn't even really done anything yet. So I think just this early, you're already starting to see that he's not just going to be another big jacked up guy. Like, he's got it, for lack of a better way of describing it, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I just want to see him kill people. If they showed that for the 2 hours of Raw, it'd be the greatest one they ever made.
Yeah. To me, here it's like he has this like old school Vader energy going on right now, which is awesome.
Oh, that's a good comparison. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, and as we'll see, this is one of the things I remember. So I know we're going with this, and it's kind of something they used to do with Vader too. But anyway, all right. But yeah, that was an awesome angle. Just continues to build Brock. All right, so next match we have is if you look up filler match in the dictionary, this is what you would find. We have Mr. Perfect, 2002 Mr. Perfect versus Big Show. Besides a perfect plex, this was pretty much a squash. This was just Big Show beating up Mr. Perfect for like maybe 2 minutes and then winning with a choke slam. I went a half a star. To me, there's really not a ton to talk about with this one. I think it was literally just to fill 5 minutes of TV time.
I echo your sentiment 100%. The only thing I wrote was perfect plex on show, which was awesome. But other than that,
yeah.
Next.
Yeah, actually, I may go a star just because the perfect plex on show was good. But yeah, it was absolutely, I mean, complete filler. But we'll leave it at that. Really not much else to say about that one. So we cut backstage and we have Austin as he finds a seat at Ric Flair's desk. I'm assuming, I guess, because he's still pissed off. All right. And so at this point, we head out for our main event, which is going to be Scott Hall versus Stone Cold. We see X-Pac still has the Kane mask, which I thought was a good touch. And they also said on commentary that Kane was in the hospital. So it's already kind of putting into our heads that if the NWO does decide to get involved with this, that Kane is not going to be able to break it up. And King gets in a corny joke asking if Kane still has to go to the burn unit, which is a nice King cornball joke. Like we said earlier, Austin's still getting a big reaction. He's all over Hall to start. So in this match, one thing I definitely noticed in this, and I'm not usually a person who's like all over this or looking for it or even notices very much, but this is one of the few instances where I couldn't hear it, but I felt like I could really clearly see Hall and Austin like communicating, like trying to call the spots. And it definitely seemed like it was Stone Cold trying to walk Scott Hall through this match, because really one of the bigger stories of this match is that Hall just did not look good at all to me in this match. I don't know if it's that Austin didn't really trust him. And so you could see a lot of hesitation. Like, I find whenever he was throwing Hall into the ropes, you could kind of see him hesitate a little bit, almost like he was waiting to see how he was going to react. And he just looked rough. Everything Scott Hall did, I found this match looked really hesitant and slow. There were like a lot of weird moments where he couldn't get up for like a suplex, or there was like Austin goes for the thrust press, and like it's like Hall couldn't elevate to get up for it. And so he really just looked rough. So to me, this was like Austin pretty much trying to carry him through this match. And I felt it looked really disjointed because of that, because Hall just looks like he can't keep up anymore. I think Austin did the best he could to try and bring some intensity to it. But I think it definitely had a ceiling to it. Did you notice any of what I'm saying when you're watching this, Scott? Or
yeah, I have a note here that like the beginning of the match, you know, it was okay. Hall's bumping for Austin always was great. I think about that Mania mm-hmm. stunner all the time with that. And I wrote here, not really feeling the middle of this match, which is what you describe with it mm-hmm. feeling disjointed. It just seemed like they were just going through the motions. And you know, it came out later that Austin did not trust Hall at all because, you know, mm-hmm. and Hall didn't look to, I mean, I have no room to talk, but Hall did not look to be in the best shape.
No.
So it was a paint by numbers match, and I got some other notes when we get to it, but it was, yeah,
definitely. And so kind of like after the hot start, the only thing that's kind of keeping Hall in it is that X-Pac kind of keeps on interfering. So we get a ref bump and then Taker comes in, but then Bradshaw kind of cuts him off and gets him out of the picture. Hall gets a pin, but Austin kicks out. The ref is down again. So they two on one. So they get a 2-on-1 on Austin, but Flair comes out, ejects X-Pac, and then Austin kind of catches Flair, gives him a stunner, and then he catches the stunner on Hall, and that gets him the win. And so I thought I went 2 stars on it because I thought the nonsense actually helped, like all the interfering and X-Pac getting involved and everything. Because like you said, to me, the weakest parts of the match were when it was just Stone Cold and Scott Hall just kind of wrestling a normal match, because Hall was so limited that there was only so much they could do. So I actually thought it was kind of smart to have all this bullshit happen with X-Pac interfering and then Undertaker coming out and Bradshaw cutting him off, because it kind of at least distracts you from kind of how rough the match itself was. And so I kind of give it 2 stars just for Austin's kind of normal intensity and brawling, but definitely not the most fun match to watch, I would say.
Yeah, I went 2.5, and the run-ins were the best part for me. Like, you know, mm-hmm. Taker runs down, and then even going back to the Bradshaw, they're making him be like a upper mid-card main eventer because he comes and helps Austin now mm-hmm. after helping, and like he fights off Taker. But then, you know, Flair comes down, and yeah, but I did like Austin stunning Flair at the end. That was nice because, you know, he's still don't trust anyone mantra. But I wish they would have swapped out Taker and RVD for the main event instead of Austin and Hall. I feel it would have been a better ending to the show.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because this is a discussion that we had on the Raw post draft, where the entire show was about you know, what show was Austin gonna pick, and they spent, I mean, if you take into account all the backstage segments, the main event promo where he signs it, you can definitely, like, there's a ton of time devoted to Austin. And you could tell they definitely still feel this pressure that he is still, like, you know, he's the man. And you have to close the show with him, even if you know that Scott Hall is not going to be able to put in much of a performance. You still need Stone Cold on last, because it almost feels like the Hogan Must Pose thing, you know? It's kind of like,
must bash.
Yeah, exactly. Like Austin, he's got to stunner people. He's got to drink the beer. You have to close the show that way. But I did like like you said, that he stuns Flair, because it sort of gives us a cliffhanger. And I think they even mentioned on commentary, like, because Flair did say at the beginning of the show that they're not going to put their hands on him or there's going to be hell to pay. And so now he just gave Flair another stunner. So even though Austin won this match, is it going to come back to bite him? So it kind of gives us a cliffhanger for next week. And at this point, they kind of did clear it up on commentary, how it's going to go. that basically this sort of means, because I think JR was like, so Austin's going to face Taker at Backlash, which, again, they didn't really set up at the beginning of the show. I mean, you could kind of assume that's where they were going to go with it. But basically, so now Austin is going to face Taker at Backlash to determine who's going to be the number one contender, which, again, I feel like you can kind of see that coming. But like you had said earlier, Scott, they really did not do a great job of establishing that in the opening promo.
Yeah, it's just I'm glad they got it all figured out, but it was like it felt like one of those Nitros where you hear where they were still writing it while they were on the air. And that's what it feels like with this Raw.
I really need to do some research and see if this, what the story is on the Taker thing. If like they really, if, did they plan this or did they literally like the next day scrap the Taker title match? Because they had to do a lot of work to kind of to fix it. It'd be amazing to me if this was the plan, that they were going to say Taker was getting the shot, then go back on it, have them do these two number one contenders. Like if that was the plan, that is. It's quite a plan to have, like, ahead of time. But yes, all right. Anyway, so overall thoughts on this episode of Raw? I thought it was an improvement from so last week. I think I went 4 out of 10, so I give this one a 5 out of 10 because I felt like they cut down on some of the empty promos backstage, and I like that they're actually starting to build some things for Backlash. We're starting to see things come together, and also we had a couple. Pretty solid matches. Like I thought the women's match was pretty solid, and Taker RVD was a really fun match. So between that and kind of the show being a little more focused than last week, I kind of did a little uptick and went to 5 to 10. Did you have a rating for this one, Scott?
Yeah, I went 6 out of 10. And mm-hmm. I mean, I will say the 2 hours did go by pretty quick as I was watching it. So. Yeah, I went 6 out of 10. It definitely seemed more focused compared to the previous week, and they're starting to get like some players and some storylines that are Raw specific, which I really liked. And you'll see more with, we'll talk about more with SmackDown, but they're starting to be more brand specific with just the Raw, and like they didn't talk about SmackDown at all besides like Triple H being the champion facing Hogan, which I enjoyed.
Yeah. That's a good point. They're starting to actually like focus on what they have going on. Yeah, you could tell they're starting to get past the transition, and it's starting to feel like we had like a week where it felt really like complete filler. Like that episode where Austin's trying to decide which show to go to, that felt like complete filler. Like they were trying to figure out what the hell they wanted to do. Or now at least it seems like they're starting to build a Backlash. Like now we have Taker Austin, which I mean, that's obviously a match that's been done before, but it is, you know, Taker and Austin. So at least we kind of have an idea of where we're going. So, okay. So let's go. Let's move on to SmackDown. So the April 11th, 2002 SmackDown. So we're live not far from Phoenix. We are in Tucson, Arizona. And just like we did on Raw, we're going to start the show off with a big opening promo. Kurt Angle is out for the opening promo, and we already know that he is set to face Triple H later tonight. Kurt complains about Hogan getting the shot like he's been doing since last week. He says, please. He said he beat the Russians and Iranians way tougher than Nikolai Volkov and Iron Sheik like Hogan did. He has to talk over a "you suck" chant, which was, I thought was really awesome. Was great heel. He says tonight he's going to prove it in a non-title match with Triple H that he should be the one getting the shot. The only thing I didn't like here is that I thought Cole was insufferable in commentary here. He kept on like everything Kurt would say. He would do these like really forced laughs and say, what is he going to cry? He's so whiny. Is he a baby? And already starting to say that before Edge even comes out, that Edge is so much more fun and such a laid back, cool guy compared to Angle. I thought it was really forced. But other than that, I've talked about it already on this podcast, but I really love this Angle where he's kind of the whiny, deluded, entitled Kurt Angle. And he's so good at putting this over. So I really love this first segment of these, of this opening promo. What did you think, Scott, of the first part with Angle before Edge comes out?
I loved it. The crowd is all over him with the "you suck" chants, and then they start doing the "what" chants. And I wrote this down. He said the only "what" you'll be chanting is what an unbelievable butt kicking Triple H will get. So that I think that's just great. Like, he's such like a dork, and
yes.
And then he was trying to get the crowd to say it's true after he says something, and the crowd was just having none of it. And I just, it's just amazing to see that, because I was watching Raw at the time, but I don't think I was getting UPN at the time, so I didn't watch SmackDown until like 2004. So this was brand new to me. I had never seen it before. So it's off to a good start, in my opinion.
Yeah, and he's so good at working the crowd and getting the heat. Like, it's just fun to see somebody getting such intense heel heat. It's like, it makes me miss it, kind of.
Someone actually not afraid to be a heel, so.
Exactly. And so his foil, who he's beginning the feud with, Edge, comes out to cut him off. As he's trying to get this crowd to say that it's true, that he's great. So Edge, I thought he had kind of I put in my notes a Guy Fieri shirt on. It's kind of the short sleeve, kind of black and red bowling shirt looking deal, but like a leather bowling shirt. It was something to behold.
I said weird fashion choice, the leather on leather combo.
Yeah, it was it was surely something. Going straight to Flavor Town with that ensemble. So he tells Kurt to quit living in the past. Dude says they can settle their unfinished business at Backlash. Easy for me to say. Angle calls him a snot-nosed punk, and he says he will kick his ass. So again, just awesome dork Kurt Angle calling him a snot-nosed punk. He's like he's in Greece or something. He's like he's in the 1950s, like snot-nosed punk. And so Edge tells him it's something that he doesn't hear very often. It's a date, and says instead of "what," they should chant "you suck." And so to end it, Angle tells them to play his music. So they start playing his music, and he immediately regrets it and starts telling him no, turn his music off. And he's kind of screaming around the ring, telling him to turn his music off. Really awesome. Angle is, like we said, as the heel dork. Deluded dork is really awesome. I wanted to get your thoughts on Edge, because they're obviously trying to push this Edge as kind of like I don't know how to describe it. Like, I guess a reverent kind of like he's making corny jokes, but he kind of knows they're corny. And I guess he's supposed to be like kind of a cool dude. I guess, like, what are your impressions of this persona that they're trying to put on Edge and he's trying to portray?
I actually enjoyed it. It was a nice change, because I just remember like the Rated R Superstar and the Edge and Christian, like, you know, stoner, basically stoners. And I kind of enjoy like the too cool for school Edge pretty much. And it's back and forth with Angle. I like seeing his ascent to the main event. I know it takes a little bit, but it's nice to see like this like tipping off point with him and Angle.
Yeah, I think it works okay here, because he plays a pretty good foil to Angle, and I think it works okay because Angle sells all of his stuff really well. Like, Angle looks upset at you know, every time Edge is dogging him, like Kurt sells it like he's been like got the worst insult of his life. So I think it works okay. I can't say I'm like in love with it, but also the thing is that I will give him the benefit of the doubt, because I feel like it's really hard being a modern face without either being like a Stone Cold, like you're a badass, or you're like a complete underdog. And he's not really either of those. So he's trying to play it a little bit in the middle, which I think is kind of tough. So I will give him credit for that. And I don't think he seemed horrible, but I'd like to see where it goes, I guess. Like, to me, he kind of almost felt like a guy that we've been watching on PTB NXT recently, which is Bo Dallas. He almost came off to me like a face Bo Dallas, because he kind of has the same sort of like goofy corniness going on, except we're supposed to like him, and he's not really like a dick that we're supposed to hate. but he kind of had that sort of energy. So it's definitely interesting. I want to see where it goes before I completely, you know, make my full judgment. So we'll see what happens. But he played well for Angle, I think, like you said. Okay, and so we cut backstage. Jericho is talking with Angle, who also, Chris Jericho, also has a Guy Fieri shirt on, which is like a short sleeve, like rayon flamed deal he's got going on.
That's why I actually laughed when you mentioned that for Edge, because I had the same thing written down for Jericho. I said Jericho wearing a shirt from the Guy Fieri collection. So
apparently this is not a heel or a face fashion choice. This is just, maybe it's a Canadian thing. I don't know. but he says that he will, Jericho says he'll beat the hell out of Edge. And then Kurt says he cannot stand loudmouth Canadians with long blonde hair that look like rock stars, except for you, Chris. And so they form a pack, which, because since they're sort of feuding with the same guys, that they're going to make a pack to watch each other's backs, basically. I thought they were really great together. They both are so good at playing these kind of heel dork characters. But I mentioned this on the last episode. I think the reason it works well with them is because when they get in the ring, they're still badasses. Like, that's the thing I love about this Angle character too. And Jericho kind of has the same vibe, is that they're like complete dorks backstage and in their promos, but they can still bring in the ring, so they know how to crank it up when they actually get in the ring. But I thought this was a fun little segment to see that they're kind of like the heels are sort of watching each other's backs.
Yeah, I enjoy that in wrestling. I guess that might be a NWA WCW thing, where all like the baby faces were together, mm-hmm. and all the heels were friends together. And so like Jericho and Angle linking up just because they have common enemies, I definitely enjoy. And I really enjoyed the Angle insulting Jericho by, you know, saying he hates Canadians with long blonde hair. That made me laugh. And I agree, once that bell rings, they're all business. So it's nice to show that, you know, yeah, we can be dorks, but, you know, we can back it up too.
Yeah. Okay, so back to the ring. We have a cruiserweight match between Tajiri and the Hurricane. So the angle we have going right now is that Tajiri is with Tori, but he basically is sort of mistreating her. He's controlling. And so this week he has Tori out in, I guess, what you'd call like a kimono. I think on commentary they say it's like a geisha outfit. And so Taz explaining Taz explaining the whole geisha outfit on commentary cracked me up, because he's got his, like, you know, heavy whatever Brooklyn New York accent, and he's explaining like the point of the geisha outfit is that he's like, she's beneath the man, Cole. It means she's beneath the man. And so he's trying to explain to us like the cultural meaning behind the geisha outfit, which I thought was funny. So they're starting to tell us that Tajiri will get a match at Backlash, and mostly what they talk about on commentary is the whole thing with Tori. But the match itself, I thought it was nothing like super noteworthy, but really solid back and forth. Like, kind of just a typical, really quick cruiserweight match. I thought Hurricane looked really good in this match. He had a lot of cool spots. But like, nothing really to write home about, but nothing, you know, everything was pretty solid. Tajiri won it with one of his brutal kicks. So I just kind of went with a solid 2 on this one. Again, kind of just a solid cruiserweight TV match, which is always welcome. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I went 2.25 stars. Just echoing what you said, like, Hurricane looked pretty good on offense. I have heard that he hit a sunset flip from the top rope, which I thought was pretty cool. As you know, you don't really see most people jump off the top rope and then doing a sunset flip. So I thought that was a nice comeback. And Tajiri really killed Hurricane with that kick. So that was a nice little ending. And just good little throwback WCW cruiserweight match.
I really thought Hurricane looked good. It had me thinking like the Hurricane. I mean, he had a good run as the Hurricane, but I kind of was thinking when I was watching this, I was like, man, the Hurricane, I don't know if he's really ahead of his time, but I could definitely see the Hurricane K character with him because he's a really good worker. Presented today in sort of the almost like the El Generico kind of deal. Like if you would be presented that way, I don't know if it could work on like a main roster WWE, but I could definitely see like an NXT character, kind of like the Hurricane, and I really think it would get over. I don't know. Yeah, I just had that thought.
I didn't think of it until you said something, but you know, with social media, he can make like these viral videos because he always used to act like he was like a reporter, and he could be like, "Oh, I'm here on the scene," and then like you know, it pans over and like the Hurricane saving someone. So I think that would be a cool little extra vignette, easier for me to say, for him to be like to get like viral videos and stuff. I'm a Hurricane fan, so I really enjoy everything that he does. So
So post match we get Tajiri again is berating Tori like he did last week. And while he's doing this, Kidman sneaks up behind him, hits a drop kick behind Tajiri, kind of basically just furthering the feud. Taz starts to say on commentary that he thinks Kidman is finagling Tori, so I guess they're trying to work that. I guess they're kind of turning this into like a love triangle sort of angle with Kidman, I guess, being the like rescuing her from Tajiri sort of thing. It's a very odd angle, though. I feel like there's a something about it just being like an Asian guy screaming at her, this woman screaming at her in Japanese, and he's like the heel. It's just, it's a very strange angle to me. I don't know. It's got a weird vibe to it.
I agree, but I will say the missile dropkick was really cool because the way they shot it, you see like Tajiri yelling at Tori, and then her eyes get as big as saucers, and that's when Kidman hits Tajiri. So that was a nice little added touch.
Yeah, in ring, I'm down for it. I think it's a really awesome. I think they're both really good workers. It's just the whole him screaming at her thing. It's just strange too. I don't even know how to describe it. It's got a very weird vibe. Like because I have these shots where it's like a minute and a half of him in the ring just screaming at her. It's a little uncomfortable at times. But anyway. Speaking of uncomfortable, so we go backstage into not uncomfortable yet, but we'll get to it later. We see Stacy go into Vince's office and we get some gratuitous Stacy leg shots. And that's about it. So we'll see legs for days. So we'll come back to Stacy in a minute. That was, I guess, what we'd call a teaser. All right. So back to the ring. Moving on. We have Albert versus Scotty. This is Scotty Tuhati, I should say, not just Scotty. This is based on the massive Albert and Scotty implosion that happened last week. Historic moment when the Albert and Scotty Tuhati tag team broke up. That was a very bold move of Albert to wear the short trunks because he is a very large, hairy man to be wearing the brief trunks, but more power to him, I guess. So the whole thing on commentary for this is that they say that Albert has given no reason as to why he turned on Scotty. And I really think it's because they can't think of any good reason as to why he did it or any like interesting angle for this. But the match was basically, I mean, Scotty showed a little bit of fire, trying to go after the big man's legs, but this was for all intents and purposes a squash. With Albert winning with the Baldo bomb, I went 1 star, and I cannot say that the Albert Scotty feud is lighting the world on fire, but I guess it seems like they're trying to put Albert over as like, I guess build him into a singles guy, which I don't know if I'm buying that either.
Scotty's gimmick feels so outdated, and I know they like, it was like 99, 2000 when Too Cool and Rikishi were big, but holy crap, it felt like 10 years had passed. Like,
you should watch TakeOver Arrival if you want to see it really look dated. Because they're on tape.
Yes, I remember
they're on
that.
TakeOver Arrival.
And my favorite thing with Cole on commentary during this, he was saying they were like brothers. I was like, I have no recollection of them ever tag teaming.
Yeah.
I know you brought that up last podcast, but it's like,
you're doing too hard of a sell for this. And and I saw that Albert has a an Asian tattoo, and I said, "Is this start of the Lord Tenzai gimmick?"
So, yeah.
But the crowd did eat up when Scotty was about to do the worm, so that the worm's still over.
Still got the worm.
And I went so, half a star. Sorry.
Completely understandable. So post match, Albert continues to pound on Scotty, but Rikishi, our first appearance of Rikishi on these shows, at least for this podcast's purposes, Rikishi comes out to make the save, and it definitely seems like they're positioning this to be the feud. Like Scotty was just sort of a stepping stone to push maybe an Albert versus Rikishi feud, which honestly makes a lot more sense. I guess if you want, you know, like a big meaty man feud, this is, I guess, will do the job. So I'm guessing this was the real point. I can't say I'm super excited. I like Rikishi okay, but Albert just, I don't know. He's never really done it for me in any of his incarnations.
I agree 100%. And, you know, if they were trying to make a monster out of Albert, they should have had him just destroy Rikishi too. And with Rikishi feels dated as well. And my wife was actually watching this part with me, and I was like, "Do you know whose sons, you know, was that with Rikishi?" She's like, "The Usos." I was like, "Yeah," because I have her watching. How I got her into wrestling side topic was through Total Divas. Yeah, yeah. So that's how she knows all the wrestling stuff, and that's how I got her into wrestling. I backdoored it through Total Divas.
Oh, yeah. Is Keish, is he make any appearances on Total Divas? Any Rikishi cameos? I've never watched it, so I don't really know.
I want to say he was because Naomi's married to one of the Usos, and I think it was like a background scene, and I'm always like pausing it and like pointing out the wrestlers in the background. But she knows the Usos and doesn't approve their drinking and driving, but that's a whole other story.
Gotcha. All right. So, we head backstage again, and Vince discovers Stacy in his office, and he says he will be interviewing candidates for his personal assistant. And she says that she is going to give him an offer he cannot refuse. So, we'll see the culmination of this in a minute. Okay. So we cut somewhere else backstage, and we have Billy and Chuck, and they're insulting Maven's, very thick eyebrows. So Al Snow comes to his defense, and they set up a match for later, which I originally thought was going to be a tag match, but apparently it ended up being Al Snow versus Chuck, I think. So we have that set for later, so stay tuned if that's keeping you invested, Al Snow versus Chuck. Again, all right, we cut to another backstage segment. We have Hogan backstage with an interviewer. I did not remember this interviewer at all. I don't know if she sticks around very long or not. I don't think they mentioned her name, but I had no recollection of this interviewer. I don't know if you did, Scott.
It was Charmel, Booker T's wife.
Oh.
Like Cole sneaks it in there, like, real quick. And it says Charmel. But I had no memory of her being in WWE either. I thought it was just the King Booker run, so I had no idea she was a backstage interviewer.
That was completely lost on me. I did not catch that at all, but good catch, because I surely did not know. Hogan he's very babyface here. He puts over Triple H, says that he has Hulkamania, but Jericho cuts him off, says Triple H has everything to lose. And it makes if Triple H loses, it will make all the rehab all for nothing. And that makes Triple H a very dangerous man. I wasn't a huge fan of this little segment with Jericho, because it felt very weird to me, because Jericho's a heel and he just comes in and basically just like puts over Triple H the entire promo and how dangerous Triple H is and all that. It didn't really work for me. And to me, it was kind of an empty segment. I really didn't see the point of it. I don't really like how it makes Jericho look. That why is he coming to put over? Why is he coming to put over how great Triple H is? So I thought it was a very weird segment. I wasn't too high on this one.
Yeah, I just totally blanked when Jericho started talking. it just seemed like, you know, they're there to like make sure people remember that Triple H is champion, to be completely honest, and he's a supposed threat, which I'll get into more about Triple H in this episode. But Hogan is just ridiculously over. It's just insane. And for the Maven, Billy and Chuck and Al Snow, that looked like it was put on in a high school drama department. That segment.
Yeah, not the greatest. So what they try and do at the end with the Jericho Hogan thing is that, like, that Hogan is pissed off that Jericho cut him off and that Jericho is like disrespected him. I like punked him out, which to me, I didn't really see that very much. I mean, he did, I guess, interrupt him. But in a way, he felt like he was just trying to give him sort of like advice, which so I didn't see why Hogan would be that pissed off. I don't know. The whole thing was just it was kind of strange. I wasn't a big fan of it. But anyway, okay. So next up, we have Jericho versus Edge, which was, I think, hyped earlier in the show. These guys have been kind of – so we've kind of had this feud building between Jericho and Angle and Edge. Triple H, all of them are kind of all intertwined as, like, faces and heels. So I thought this was basically like a sort of a teaser of what these two guys could do, like a teaser match between – Edge and Jericho. I went 2 stars on it. There was a lot of nonsense. There's a ref bump. Angle comes out. He gets hit with a spear. Allows a bulldog by Edge. And there's Edge locks in, I guess, a submission move, which I didn't think looked that great. It was like the educator. But the ref is out. Jericho gets a chair, but then he gets speared, and then the ref wakes up for a near fall. Then Angle yanks out Edge, and then so Y2J gets to roll it. Basically, a lot of Angle interfering, kind of going back to what they said earlier in the show about them having each other's back. So there was really too much nonsense going on with Angle for them to really have enough time to do any kind of real match. So I only went 2 stars, but from what we did get, I thought there was I thought it was Jericho. There was a nice heat segment with Jericho on top of Edge, and I thought that was pretty good. But overall, not enough, really, I would say, to, again, like a teaser, I would say. What'd you think of this one, Scott?
Yeah, I went 2.25 stars on this. There's like a ref bump in every match, it seems like, and you just get kind of numb to it. But I did say that Edge had a nice reversal out of the walls that Jericho had about halfway through the match. Mm-hmm. And Edge did have a visual tap on the educator, which mm-hmm. is a move I completely forgot about. And so like you are seeing with these wrestlers, like that when they go against main event stars, that, you know, they do have a chance to win, which can't always be said in the WWF and WWE. Mm-hmm. So like, cause the same could be said with, like, RVD could have beat Taker, and I feel like, you know, oh, Edge would have won if the ref would have been in there, and, you know, mm-hmm. Angle interferes, and then Jericho's cool boys for the win. But it was a decent match. I would like to see more from Edge and Jericho, so hopefully we do.
Yeah, and I'm almost of the mindset where the appearances don't bother me as much, because I guess kind of completely fine with, it's like, I don't want them to give me Jericho Edge, like the full, you know, the best they have on Raw, I guess. Like, I want to see Jericho Edge at a pay-per-view. I like the build to it. And I guess it puts them in a weird position, which I think is something I'd like to see. I'd like to follow as I continue on in this era, because they're in this era now where after the Attitude Era and everything, you can't just come out on TV like this and do squash matches and that sort of thing. You have to put the big names, you have to put these big name matches out there, but then they're also torn because they don't want to just give away, you know, a 20-minute Jericho Edge match on TV. So then they have to figure out a way out of it. How can we give them this without really giving them this? And so a lot of times it seems like, at least from what I've seen so far, what they do is go there, go with the run-ins and the ref bumps and that sort of thing. So it's like, I guess I give them the benefit of the doubt because as long as they pay it off eventually, I'm kind of okay with it. But it definitely doesn't make for a great match in a vacuum when you're just watching the match by itself, for sure. Okay, so next up, so after the match, we have Edge and Angle. Sorry, Angle and Jericho are double teaming Edge. Angle hits a sick angle slam on the concrete. I think it was backstage, I want to say, right?
Yeah, it was backstage.
Yeah, they had him backstage, and then Hogan comes in and saves Edge. And so it's just them continuing to build more goodwill for Hogan, that he's like the rescuing babyface to come save Edge from the two heels beating him down. Pretty basic, but, you know, good enough.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it, like, gives, like, Edge, like, a little bit of a star rub that, like, you know, it's not, you know, some random person running. It's not like DDP running in to help him. It's Hogan. Like, the main event. So.
Yeah, kind of gives him, like, a pseudo, like, a mini rub, you know.
Yeah.
Like, what you mean. Okay, so we are... We are back in the ring. We have the desk set up because Vince is ready to interview people to be his personal assistant. So we have multiple candidates out. Candidate number one is an older lady named Sylvia Johnson, who is very much a classic kind of school marm caricature. She has kind of like a rolled up bun and some glasses. And Vince says that is not his type. And so he kicks her to the curb. Let's talk about these as they go. Any thoughts on Sylvia, Scott?
You stole what I had written down. He's like, qualified, sorry, but not my type. Out.
Yeah.
I just, like, this, I know Vince is supposed to be a heel, but this is like the funny Vince heel that, you know, I enjoy. Yeah. Where he, like, doesn't, like, he shows a little ass, so it's fine.
Yeah, and so it's so absurd. It's like the fun, absurd, ridiculous, over the top Vince. Okay, so we get so the next person that comes out is actually a man, to our surprise. A commentary, Taz said it's the guy from American Pie, assuming, I guess he's trying to say the guy looked like Jason Biggs. Then he says it's Steve from Blue's Clues. The crowd is not happy that there's a male candidate. So he gets an asshole chant. And so Vince does not even give him the time of day. He just immediately screams, "Get out!" And so I thought this was very progressive of Vince, that he wants to make sure that he gets a female candidate. Not really, but any thoughts on this? I don't even think – did they even give him a name? I don't even think he got a name.
I don't think so. I wrote that he looks like Ryan from The Office. So that's what I was imagining when he was walking down. Was it just Ryan from The Office trying to get hired? So
Ryan from The Office, Jason Biggs, whatever his name is, does not get the job. Our next candidate is Sue Atchison. These names are incredible. Sylvia Johnson, Sue Atchison. These are wonderful names. Sue can type 95 words a minute, which is very impressive. And Vince asks if she takes dictation. And does she mind doing personal favors? Says that she's qualified. And so I felt like he almost was kind of into Sue Atkinson a little bit. Like he may have been willing to, if there was not our final candidate, he may have gone with Sue Atkinson. I don't know. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I had that, you know, she actually looked like Edie Falco from The Sopranos. Yeah, sure. When she came out.
Yeah.
And obviously the crowd was behind her because they gave her a "We Want Puppies" chant. So, and I'm not sure if you caught that, but that did make me laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just another one of those things that didn't age that well. But
yeah, we'll sum up the whole. We'll talk about the segment as a whole in a second. So finally, to no one's surprise, Stacy comes out because she already talked about this last week. Stacy comes out, dances on the table. And then Vince falls out of the chair, and so this is the GIF you see all the time of or GIF or GIF, whatever the hell you call it, This is the one of Vince that gets used all the time for everything, of him falling out the chair, is from this actual moment, which I thought was kind of amazing, which was very historic for this episode of SmackDown in 2002. And he falls out of the chair and he says, "You're hired." So to no one's surprise, Stacy gets the job.
And he had like this goofy smile on his face, like when after he fell out of the chair, it just made me laugh. And another thing at the end when they're leaving the ring, I don't know if you noticed this, but she actually held the rope for Vince to get out of, which just was a little thing that made me laugh. And like he just like looks at her and like she holds the rope for him and like he just like gets underneath the rope and it was just like, oh, I made the right decision, damn it.
Yeah, it's. So this whole thing, it's like I'm kind of conflicted on it because part of it is that it's the like absurd, ridiculous like Vince that I enjoy, like with just all the over the top falling out of the chair and stuff. And like you said, like him showing ass, kind of looking like a goofball, that sort of thing. But then at the same time, so I love that aspect of it. The parts that obviously don't age well. Especially, I think now in the time we live in, post Me Too and Harvey Weinstein and all, maybe the idea of like a lecherous, old man in authority is not the best look, you know, maybe does not, the joke maybe deflates a little bit given, you know, if you think of those things. I guess that's the part I don't like about it, even though I do like the absurdity of it. I like the goofy names like Sue Atchison and stuff are hilarious to me. But I guess just a general concept behind it is maybe could be a little off-putting for people nowadays. So I'm conflicted on it, I guess. What do you think?
Yeah, I am too, because like, you know, he... Like the guy that looks like Ryan from The Office, before he even says anything, he's like, "Get out!" and like yelling at him and stuff. And you know, Stacy, you know, I know this is wrestling and sports entertainment. She doesn't even say like what her qualifications are, and she just gets in there and dances. Yeah. And he's like, "You're hired." Like you said, it was good, but it's something that could not happen in 2020.
Yeah, the absurd comedy parts of it I like, but I think there's probably ways you could do Vince absurd comedy and not have it do this. And also, I guess the other thing, if you just want to go for like wrestling booking kind of thing, Vince is supposed to be this like evil heel authority figure. But at least in this time frame, I mean, this gets him over with the crowd. I mean, the crowd's eating up everything, and they're on Vince's side. They're totally cheering him for making this decision. So it really doesn't do much to build him as a heel. So I guess from that aspect, you can kind of argue, well, what's the point? If he's a heel, This is not – you're spending 10 minutes, and it's not getting any heat on him at all.
Yeah, they could have done this with Flair so much easier, and it would actually fit into, you know, the line for the Space Mountain still open, and, you know – he could have been holding to be his, was it secretary? Oh, personal assistant. So it would have worked so much better and would have fit in with his actual, you know, personality instead of, you know, Vince just being a perv, an old perv.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. The nature boy persona. No, that's right. That could have worked. I could get down with that. But yeah, I guess it's just a, you know, 20 years ago kind of, that's just, you're bound to run into that. And of course, different times. But anyway, okay, so we have D-Von now after Vince's interview. D-Von is in the back with Vince. He is in a suit, and he says he found himself and the man above. And basically, this entire promo is basically D-Von introducing the Reverend D-Von character. And so they kind of establish this thing where their Vince is going to fund him, I guess, like Vince is going to be his benefactor sort of thing. I have to see where it goes because I don't remember much. I mean, obviously this does not become like a main event gimmick, but I like it. And it's very like the basic idea behind it, I kind of am okay with. I like the concept behind it. And he does a good job with the delivery, D-Von does. But we'll have to see how it goes. But this quick promo is just to kind of introduce that this is going to be his persona moving forward.
Yeah, I liked it because, like, you see on Raw, and it's like Bubba hasn't changed. He just lost his tag team partner, and he's dancing like a fool. And least with this one, you know, we're seeing Reverend Devon, which is a brand new character. Like, he's washing away, like, his Dudley-ness and now becoming the Reverend. And, you know, I love, like, it seems like they're going to be trying to steal money, you know, get people to donate. And I can't wait to see where this character goes because I don't have that much recollection of it, personally.
Yeah, same here. So
I know he was in one of the SmackDown vs. Raw games as Reverend Devon. So that was that's my main thing.
It at least lasted that long. At least got in the video game. So it at least had to last a little while. All right, so we head back into, I guess, the parking garage or some area where there's cars. And so we have Mark Henry. We have a really random crew, quite a motley crew of wrestlers hanging out back in the parking lot. I didn't catch everybody, but there was there's definitely a Funaki appearance, which I popped for. I can't remember who else. Just a bunch of random wrestlers were there. I don't know if you took note of any other ones. Funaki was the one that stood out to me the most. And we'll get to Testus here, but he's a major player in this. Did you catch any other random people?
Yeah, it was basically the WCW Job Squad. It was Chavo Guerrero, Hugh Morris, DDP, Lance Storm, Funaki, like he said. And yeah, I got a question for you before the end of this segment, but I want you to get to it first.
Okay. And so this whole segment is like Mark Henry. So Tess gets in a limo. And so all the guys put money in to see if Mark Henry can hold back this limo while someone hits the gas. And he's basically got his back against the wall and he's going to brace himself against the wall and push the limo back with his legs as somebody accelerates. And the person accelerating, the driver is Test. And so Test hits the gas for like a good 20 or 30 seconds. Mark Henry is able to hold the limo back. And then kind of at the end of it, all the wrestlers get pissed because they say that Test is holding on the accelerator too long. So they kind of give him crap for it. And that is pretty much the whole segment is that, I guess. I don't know if the point of this was like to get heat on Test or to just put over how strong Mark Henry is. I didn't really understand. This is a very like. Seemed very random to me. Like, I did not understand what the point of this was. I mean, I guess to show that Mark Henry's strong, I guess. I don't know.
You brought this up in your last episode, how Test was a dick because he won the Immunity Battle Royal. And I love Test that's a dick just because he won the Immunity Battle Royal and can't be fired. I'm interested to see where that goes. But what I was wondering is, like, what the hell are they doing with the car? Like, I may be dumb, but I don't know what he's supposed to be doing. And even with you explaining it, I'm still like, what the hell? And yeah.
Yeah, I guess he's just like laying on the gas, I guess, which, I mean, I guess I don't know how strong Mark Henry is or how like these strongmen are, but it seems like implausible even for someone as big and strong as Mark Henry to hold back a car where someone's flooring the gas. I don't really know how that works, but I don't know. It was very strange and just seemed like a segment they threw out there to like kill like 5 minutes. And I felt like at this point in the show that it kind of this middle area of the show with the Vince interview and then this, I felt like this middle part sort of deflated a little bit. And I think the next match we have too is nothing to write home about either. I felt this middle section of this episode of SmackDown's I felt it dragging at this point.
Yeah, it definitely did with like, I mean, the minister assistant part was pretty good, but then this, and then like the next match where this is a Velocity main event. Essentially.
Yeah. So since you just said it, let's go to this. Our next match is, which was kind of set up earlier, is Al Snow versus Chuck Palumbo. I do love Rico, though. I've really enjoyed Rico so far in here in that he's very old school and that he is constantly interfering. Like, he is always, like, he always gets involved in everything. which I really like. I like that he doesn't just stay on the outside and kind of cheer them on, that he's always involved with everything. But this was, I just put in my notes, nothing noteworthy in Snow 1 with the snowplow. And I went 1 star. And that's pretty much all I have for this match. Like you said, this is like a velocity special. Just complete filler.
Yeah, I went 1 star. The only thing that I have here is I love Billy and Chuck's theme music. It's
wonderful.
It's, like, it's such like 2000s R&B. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And also what I had here was Rico distracted the ref, and Maven was like, I'm going to run after Rico. But he caught up to Rico when they ran into the crowd. So then you see him mm-hmm. having to slow up in the background, which made me laugh. But yeah, I gave it a star as well. It was, they were making Al Snow look like Super Cena with all the interference, and then he still kicks out. So,
and I think the whole point of this, honestly, was just I think they're good, seem to be positioning Maven and Al Snow as like a tag team, because something we talked about on the last episode is that the after the draft, the tag division is like completely barren. There's like no one left because they're breaking up all your signature tag teams are broken up. There's no Edge and Christian. They broke up the Dudley Boys. They broke up the APA. So you have Billy and Chuck as the champions, but that's about it. You don't really have anybody right now to feud with them. And the Hardy Boys are caught up with Brock right now, so they're not involved. And so they need to come up really quickly. They need to put some tag teams together. And I guess they have the Maven and Snow thing, like that Snow's his mentor. So it definitely seems like they're putting them together as a team. That's how they're positioning them.
And was the tag champs, were they like the heavyweight champ where they could go back and forth? Or was that
not the yes, champ? I think. Okay. I think so. Yeah, I think they can, for sure.
Okay.
But yeah, so that's my best guess as to what the point of that match was, which is just set up, kind of maybe start a feud between them. Okay, so we head backstage and we have Hogan, who is speaking with Triple H. Hogan tells Triple H that he has his back if Jericho interferes in his match tonight with Kurt Angle. And Triple H cuts him off and says the match between he and Hulk Hogan will not be about egos like Hogan and Rock. It will be about taking that he's going to fight alone. Basically, that he does not need Hogan's help. That he doesn't like that Hogan's barging into his locker room. That if he does it again, he'll see it as an act of aggression. He says that he's the King of Kings, which I don't know how early. I don't know if that had been mentioned up to this point, but he definitely dropped King of Kings here. I don't know if he had said that much before here. Obviously, it becomes pretty synonymous with him. But I don't know if this is one of the earliest instances of him using the phrase King of Kings. But yeah, the whole point is like, I felt like it was almost him trying to do like a Stone Cold kind of loner face sort of persona, that he doesn't need Hogan's help. He can do this on his own, kind of stay out of his business. But the weird thing is it's, and it's something I'll get into later in the night too, because I think it's an issue with their feud, is that Hogan is, like you mentioned earlier, Scott, he's so over as a babyface right now that it almost makes it almost makes Triple H seem like a heel when he's supposed to be a face, because he's basically telling Hogan to stay out of his business. But Hogan is really, I mean, at the very least, getting the same amount of face heat as Triple H. So it's a weird dynamic, and that Triple H almost comes off heelish here, telling Hogan to stay out of his business. It's kind of a weird dynamic.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I wrote here that we finally see Triple H, and I think he feels really marginalized as a champ. Like, it's not the main focus of the show. It felt strangely like CM Punk's first title win when he won it on Raw, where, you know, he wasn't the main focus of the show. That's what it feels like with Triple H. Like, he's just, I know Triple H is a main eventer at the time, but it feels like he's just like placeholder for the belt before, you know, potentially goes to Hogan. And
yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, and the Austin comparison, him trying to be like an Austin type babyface, feels really, really good, because he's like, I am the game and I am that damn good. And it's like, okay, you're trying to get all your shit in, Triple H, but.
Yeah, it dragged on a little long too. Yeah, I put that too. I thought it was a little long. I think he kind of had his point and he just kind of kept dragging on. I thought it could have been a little bit. I feel like he made his point and then he kept going on. Like the main point was he's a loner. He doesn't need Hogan's help. And he just kept on dragging. Like you said, he just kept piling it on. And I got to a point where it's kind of like, okay, I get it, Triple H. You don't need help. Got it, man. But So let's get to, we'll get more into this in a second because it's going to crop up soon again. So this is our main event. So we have Kurt Angle versus Triple H. It is non-title. So this is obviously a big match on paper for a SmackDown. Angle versus Triple H is a big matchup. So we start off, there's a reversal sequence. And so this whole like first part, there's a reversal sequence and Kurt's ass just gets exposed. Like he does the thing where he pulls the straps down, but then somehow that ends up with his tights getting completely pulled down. And he has basically, I guess, like some kind of like thong or like jock strap type thing where his whole ass is exposed and it stays out for a good like 2 to 3 minutes where Angle's just bare ass. He gets beat up around the ring. They go outside and at one point in kind of a weird moment, Triple H slaps him on his bare ass, which is kind of funny. Angle then gets the momentum back. He hits the Rolling Germans. I really liked how right after the segment of him literally showing ass with his tights down, kind of this goofy thing, we immediately followed that with a segment where Angle's on top and he's back to his like kind of brutal Angle offense. Like he hits the Rolling German, so he immediately gets his heat back pretty much. Like he didn't look like a goof and then continue to look like a goof. He looks like a goof, but then he's back on top. We then get a sleeper hold and then Jericho comes out. He pulls the ref and starts beating up Triple H. The ref is back in, but it's a near fall on Triple H. So Jericho and Kurt kind of gang up on him. Hogan comes out for the save, gets beat up, but he hulks up and then takes care of Jericho, throws Jericho out. We get a Hogan chant from the crowd as the crowd's eating it up, seeing him hulk up. And then back in, Triple H hits the pedigree for the win. I thought before all the kind of nonsense started, I don't think the match ever really got out of first gear. It was basically like Triple H controlled the first segment, then Angle kind of gets back on top, and then by then Jericho's in, and we get all the run-ins with Hogan and all that, and the ref bumps and all that sort of thing. So I kind of went 2 stars, kind of in the same way the Edge and Jericho match earlier. It was kind of just, we got the first act of what you would see as a longer match if this wouldn't be on TV. So it was kind of a teaser for maybe, you know, obviously these guys could go a lot longer and have a better match than this. So I went 2 stars.
Yeah, I went 2.5 stars. The part where, you know, Angle's ass is out, Triple H slaps the hell out of his ass on that.
Yeah.
He like leaned back and came forward with it, and like you said, the Rolling Germans were really nice. It was nice to see those nice little, I hadn't seen those in a while. And, you know, and then like we see what was started off in the beginning of the show with Angle and Jericho saying, you watch my back, I'll watch yours. That's a running theme throughout the show. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hogan comes down to help, you know, Triple H and, you know, also like to make sure he doesn't get hurt so he can still have the title match. So I like that as well. And then, you know, Triple H gets the 1-2-3 because you gotta keep the chant strong, which is completely understandable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I thought that is a good point too about the Jericho and Kurt. I like that the callback that they and I think it's a nice symmetry to the Triple H and Hogan, where Angle and Jericho are kind of unified as heels. Triple H and Hogan are kind of, even though it works out and Hogan comes out and saves them, helps them get the win. We see in the post match that they are not on the same page like Angle and Jericho. So of course Triple H is pissed that Hogan came to save him because he just got done telling him to stay out of his business. Hogan then says that Triple H is his only business. So Angle then comes back into the ring, knocks Triple H into Hogan. Hogan doesn't realize that it's Kurt that hit him. He thinks it's intentional. I think it was so Angle and Jericho jump Hogan, and then Jericho cracks Hogan with the belt. And so I thought it was well done enough having them jump Hogan, but I think it was pretty good having them kind of get him to bump into Hogan and kind of cause some conflict between Hogan and Triple H. But I don't like the idea, and I think it's the only problem I have with the Hogan and Triple H feud is that they have to have these almost have to use Angle and Jericho and the heels as sort of a middleman between Triple H and Hogan, because they can't have them go right at each other because they're both faces. So they need the heels to get involved. And to me, it kind of makes it a little disjointed. And it's, to me, what kind of sucks about this whole Hogan thing coming up so suddenly for them, because obviously they didn't know really that Hogan was going to get such a huge face reaction at WrestleMania. So they kind of already had this Triple H face run planned. And so, Triple H is already a face, but obviously they need Hogan to be a face too. I really, really wish we could get full on heel Triple H here, because I think full, like 2000 heel Triple H versus this kind of old veteran face Hogan, like coming back for one last run, would be a really, really awesome dynamic. I think they're doing the best they can, but I just feel like sometimes this whole face dynamic makes it awkward, because you always have to have the heels be the intermediary between them, and then you also have to have Triple H kind of work this sort of de facto heel thing, which I don't think is doing him any favors in the feud. But I still think they're building it well enough, and at least now they have some conflict going on between the two guys. But
I agree. Like, if Triple H as a heel would have been so much better, and they had a reason with it. They could have said that, you know, Triple H could have been like, WrestleMania was supposed to be my moment. I worked all this time coming back from injury and won the Royal Rumble to win the title, and you stole my moment from it with the Hogan and Rock match. And boom, there you go. Instead of like him being like kind of whiny with like, I don't need your help. And then Hogan's like, well, you got it, brother. And like you said, like with, you know, Jericho and Angle supposed to be the ones that are like facilitating it all.
Yeah, because it's like Triple H doesn't have the personality to do like a true like face match. Like, he's not that, he doesn't have the face personality to do, you know, like the Hogan Warrior style match. You know, I don't think he can pull that off. So they have to lean him more. They have to lean him a little heel, because they need to come up with some conflict for him. And so they're leaning on this conflict that Triple H doesn't want Hogan in his business, which is not, to me, it's not the most compelling like basis for their feud. It's still a big matchup. It still feels like a really big matchup and a really big title match. It's just, I find they're struggling to build it in the best way, just based on what they have to play with, you know?
I definitely agree. And Triple H, all the writing's on the wall that like this was supposed to be his time to run with the, you know, with the title, and I feel it's coming to an end.
Yeah.
Only after
a month. Definitely after, you feel the crowd getting behind Hogan. Okay. But so this episode of SmackDown, I thought it was a bit of a step down from last week's SmackDown, which I gave a 6 out of 10. So I went 5 out of 10 on this one, mainly because the middle part of the show dragged a little bit. And I don't think we got there really wasn't a standout match for me on this one. Like on the last SmackDown, we had the Jericho Rock match, which I thought was a really awesome main event. And on this one, we really never got anything. Like, I don't think I had anything that even cracked 3 stars on this episode. So that dragged down a little bit. It was focused, But so I went 5 out of 10 because I thought it was a bit of a step down from the last SmackDown.
Yeah, I went 6 out of 10. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed like the little the ascension of Edge and like seeing Hogan and the angle and Jericho duo. I enjoyed a lot, and it was a nice little thread that went through the whole show.
Okay, so that wraps up SmackDown, and all right, so to wrap this up, Scott, we will go with our end of show awards, which we usually do. I usually do combined awards, so we'll start off. I think I know where you're going to go on this. I think you're probably on the same page as me for this one, but for best match, I went Undertaker RVD.
100%.
Yeah, that was. I think if we average out your rating and my rating, we'd be at 3.5, and I think that's, I think it's fair enough to call that a hidden gem. We'll call it a hidden gem.
I agree.
All right. Best moment. I had a few things in contention here, but I went with the Hardy Boys Brock interaction because I just thought it was so well done, and I loved that the visual of him just tossing Jeff out of the ring is something that stuck with me more than anything on Raw or SmackDown.
I agree. That was mine as well, because he, like I said, it just makes him look like such a monster.
Yeah, it was really well done. I loved it. My least valuable player, my LVP, I feel bad doing it because obviously there's probably a lot going into it, but I had to go with Scott Hall because he really looked rough in that Stone Cold match. The match itself wasn't horrible, but he looks like he's on his last leg.
I went with the NWO because mm-hmm. like they're still supposed to be main eventers, but they actually get some heat for once, and then they suspend Nash and definitely makes them look like chumps, and then you know that Scott Hall versus Stone Cold match never got out of the gate, so I chose the NWO.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's been my pick on at least one show before this. So yeah, this is not a great run for the NWO for sure. Best show. So I was kind of on the fence about this one because I actually rated them the same. I think I gave both shows a 5 out of 10. But I still lean towards Raw. I think the tiebreaker for me was that Raw just had a couple better matches. Probably that RVD Taker match probably puts it over the top for me because that was hands down the best match on either show. So I lean towards Raw.
Raw for me as well. It flowed pretty well. I enjoyed it. And what really hurt SmackDown was, you know, the Stacy segment, the Devine mm-hmm. segment, and then the Al Snow and the Mark Henry thing. And that was like, it felt like 4 hours.
Yeah, it definitely, SmackDown had definitely a big lull in the middle. And I think it didn't have any match that stood out. It had nothing memorable as far as a match. So, okay. Last thing we usually do on here is we do kind of like in the vein of the old WCW top 10. But we just do a top 5. So let's start. Let's start from the bottom. How about we count it down? Let's start with 5, and we'll work our way up to number 1. So, Scott, who did you have number 5 in your power rankings from these two shows?
Edge. He was my number 5.
Gotcha.
I
went take.
No. It's fine. Continue.
I went with Taker. But I think Edge is a good pick. I think he had a strong showing.
He just the way it like with the association with Hogan, with him getting a match with Kurt Angle and the, you know, decent match out of Jericho that I wanted to see more of, I could definitely he seems like a star on the rise.
Mm-hmm. So number 4, who'd you have number 4?
Brock hasn't even had a match yet and just amazing.
I know. I'm always so on the fence with Brock on these, but I think I had him once, but I don't have him on this one, but I definitely see why. 4, I had Hogan. Who'd you have number 3?
Undertaker.
Undertaker. So for three, match. I had three, I had Triple H. Right. Number two for you, Scott?
Austin.
Austin.
You know, he was able to get to the number one contender match, and then like he still stunned Flair at the end of the show.
Yep. Gotcha. I went number two. I had RVD for his performance in that Taker match. I really thought he looked awesome. So I gave him a nice spot this week based on that. Okay. You're number one.
Hogan. Gotcha. Super over.
Yeah, he is definitely over. The Hogan revival is in full swing at this point. Number one, I went Angle because I think out of everybody, he's the guy on these that I feel like best in and out of the ring. Like, I love his dork character. I get excited every time he comes out and the fans shit all over him and he looks like a complete goof. I don't know. He's just really awesome. And then he always brings in the ring. I love this Kurt at this point. He's probably been he would probably be my MVP since I started this show, and we'll see how it goes. I think he's going to stay pretty high for a little while. And
yeah, I think that's a really good choice.
Yeah. And so debuts, this is what I'm tracking. I think the only real debut on this, and I say debut in like a new gimmick, I would say Reverend Devon as like the only, we didn't really have any like actual debuts, like first time guys are coming out, but I kind of consider that a debut because he's completely changing his persona. So I want that for debuts. And with that, that will pretty much wrap us up for this episode of Ruthlessly Aggressive. Scott, you have anything you want to mention? Twitter handle, anything like that?
Thanks for having me, Jacob. And yeah, you can reach me at Scott. My Twitter's at Scott, Scott underscore, and then Shiflett, Shiflett. And I tweet about pretty much everything. So welcome.
Very good.
Welcome to follow me.
Yeah. It was a pleasure having you, Scott. You were a great guest. Very knowledgeable. I think you caught some things that I definitely did not catch. Of course, you can check out plenty of awesome shows dropping pretty much every day of the week on the North-South Connection podcast network. We have Wrestling Warzone with Chad and JT, Extreme Three-Way Dance, looking at basically doing what I do on this show, just with ECW, Carolina Dreamin', which is Chad's solo show, where he looks back at some classic NWA Jim Crockett stuff, Fighting Spirit of 06, which is also Chad looking at some stuff from the wrestling year of 2006, Jeff Learned Wrestling, No Holds Barred, the year that was, plenty of From Montreal to Memphis, also a new show with Aaron George. And yeah, pretty much new stuff coming out pretty like every day, every week and every day of the week. So be sure to check it out. You can go to you can follow JT Pod Guy, which is JT's Twitter handle, where he posts a lot about when everything's dropping. You can also check out on Facebook, North South Connection Podcast Network, and you can find the podcast on pretty much any podcast apparatus, iTunes, Podbean, all that kind of stuff. I don't think you have any trouble finding it. I am, of course, Jambalaya Jake Williams. You can find me on Twitter at Jambalaya underscore Jake. I also do on the PTB wrestling feed, I do PTB NXT with Tim and Jenny, which is always a fun show. And we should have a new one coming out. We do it once a month. I think we'll be coming out with a new one in the next week or so. So check all that out. And Scott, you have any last words before we wrap it up?
Go out of your way to watch the RVD and Undertaker match.
I would agree. If I were to watch one thing from this, it would probably be that in the Hardys and Brock segment. Good call. Yeah, underrated match. Can't shit on Taker for that one. Anyway, so that has been episode 3 of the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast. Everyone, stay safe, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.